You're listening to NativeTalk.net. Audio files are available online at NativeTalk.net. Be a part of the program by emailing us, podcast@NativeTalk.net. And now, your hosts Cliff and Brandon, your first choice in Native Talk Radio.
Hey, Brandon, do you know how we got to be first?
I don't know. How?
We called ahead and had the best reservation.
Oh, now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Good evening this time. Thanks for joining us today on the NativeTalk.net radio program with Cliff and Brandon. Now, we've got a little bit of a different sound with Brandon because you're actually on your phone. We're going through Messenger. How are you feeling today, pal?
Oh, man, I'm tired. I wasn't going to say I was tired on the air because that's not what people want to hear, I'm sure, but I am exhausted.
You know, but it is interesting the reason why you're tired. Why are you tired?
Because I have been on a boat for 12 hours and then
12 hours.
A lot of time cleaning up my gear.
Ah, so you're hanging out in Sacramento?
No, sir. I am up here in Tacoma or around the Salish Sea and doing some GUI duck diving.
So on the reservation?
Yeah, well, we're in the tribal waters.
That is awesome. And how'd you do today?
I did worse than I expected, but I think I'll do a lot better tomorrow.
Okay, well, I'll be interested to see how you do. But it's so exciting that you're out there at our, you know, in our native lands and having a good time. I wish I was out there with you, quite honestly. But
soon. It was raining the whole time, and it was, like, even more fun in the rain than it was in the sunshine when I was doing my testing. Like, it just felt right. I don't know how to explain it.
It was raining in the Seattle Tacoma area?
I don't know. It's a shocker, but it's true.
So how is it being away from your kids for a couple of days?
That's rough, but at least my wife is sending a lot of pictures. So I'm getting to see some really awesome socks that they run around the house in, and that's not very interesting. But
well,
yeah.
since you're away from your kids, I thought we would start the show with a kids pile. When you were a kid, how did you get punished when you got in trouble?
well,
not by me, by
one,
our
one
parents.
Piece of advice, I remember one piece of advice that you gave me before being punished. You told me to stuff a book down my pants.
When you got whoopings?
He said, put a book in your pants. It'll be better. So that's how I got punished. It was a belt or a fly swatter.
Did it work?
What, the book? No, Dad saw it right away. Butts aren't rectangular. It's kind of obvious.
All right. Now, is the way children were punished back in the day, is that different from the way they get punished today?
Depends on the house.
Okay. Like, what about your house? How do you punish your kids?
I don't know. I don't know exactly how kids were punished back in the day. How far back are we going?
Well, look, I think that it was safe to say that no television and stuff like that for the rest of the day or even the week was a pretty standard. You know, no TV, you're grounded. That's what I got. Before the whoopings, you know, I mean, they didn't just jump straight to that. First, it was no TV and you're grounded, no playing with your friends.
No video games.
Yeah, no video games. That is so yesteryear. Parents today punish their kids' misbehavior by taking away internet privilege, according to researchers from the University of South Carolina's Annenberg Center for the Digital Future. Well, that's a mouthful. Other findings.
How old are these kids that they're getting internet usage as a privilege?
Right, because your kids are not on the tablet watching YouTube.
No, I don't have a tablet actually, but they watch some YouTube on the Xbox. But I usually keep them away from that because it's, you know, unfiltered, uncontrolled content.
Are you comfortable with the amount of time your kids spend online?
My kids almost spend no time online.
So are you comfortable with that?
Yeah, I'm fine with them not touching the internet right now.
70.
I mean, they're only 10 and 5, you know.
Okay. Well, 71% of parents are comfortable with the amount of time their children spend online. So about a third of folks are not happy. To them, I'd say, you're the parent. Can't you control it? Because anytime my kids are spending too much time or whatever, I just take their stuff away. No more internet. That's easy.
Yeah, but some parents, they let their kids whining run the household.
Yeah, those are bad parents, I have to say. Well, okay, okay. Maybe that's a blanket statement, but I'm saying you're the parent, okay? You do have control, don't you think?
Yeah.
All right,
you know, because there's also another thing, if the kid's like 15 and huge, you know, and mom can't control that.
All right. Well, what about TV? Do they watch television on a regular basis?
Yeah, they do TV and video games, and that's probably the first thing to go if they're getting punished.
You comfortable with the amount of time they spend watching television?
No, I'm not.
Only half of parents are, so you're in that half. I'm okay with it, because again, if I'm not comfortable with how much time they're spending on TV, I can turn it off. You know, seems
right,
pretty easy to me.
But video games are such a nice babysitter. So I like to let them have their video game time, and then I realize it was too much.
Well, 11% of parents say that internet access has reduced the amount of time that children spend face-to-face with their friends, compared to just 7% who said that in 2000. I make my kids go outside. I mean, they're young. They don't have a ton of friends at this point. They're going to have friends when they're older, and I'm like, go outside. I kick my kids out. The answer is never about technology, according to Michael Gilbert, a senior fellow at Annenberg Center for the Digital Future. He says, this is always about parental responsibility, something that I completely agree with. So, folks, if you're not comfortable with what your children are doing, I think it's time to be a parent, since that's kind of your job.
Yeah, so. I hear your point, but it's just so much easier to be lazy.
Well, that is certainly true, and I think a lot of parents fall into that trap. Well, speaking of kids, are you interested in your kids doing better on tests?
Meh, they do pretty good.
Okay, so what would you say is the fastest way to learn something? If you're
failing.
Really?
Yes.
Failing is not the answer. Really, failing is the answer. That's the best way to learn something.
The fastest way to learn something is to do it wrong, and then you know what not to do.
Not in school. You're supposed to be learning stuff. When you're in school, your job is to learn. And failing, flunking out of the fifth grade does not make you a champion of the fifth grade.
That is not at all what I said, and that wasn't even the question. The question was, what's the fastest way to learn something? And I think if you're learning one thing, the fastest way to learn it is to just get in there and do it and mess up and learn the right way to do it.
Yeah, the fastest way to pass the fifth grade is to fail the fifth grade.
It's not what I'm saying. That's not one thing. That is a huge conglomeration of things over 180 days or more. That is not one thing. One thing is like shoot this basketball into the hoop. That's one thing. It's not like... It's not like the fastest way to learn a basketball game is to lose.
No, that would make the fastest. That would make the fastest way to learn is practice. That's what
that
is.
It might be the fastest way to get on the Kings, but not much else.
All right. Well, here's an interesting trick. Your child should teach a friend what they've learned. This is something that I've been doing forever. Now, Brandon, you'll remember this. When I was in high school, one of my go-to moves when I had to learn something was I used to teach it to you. I was like 14, 15 years old, and I think you were about 8. And the one that comes to mind is in Julius Caesar, they've got a famous speech, friends.
Act 3, scene 2.
Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. And I needed to learn that. And so I taught it to you. I mean, I'm sure you've forgotten it by now.
No, sir. I remember every word of it still.
I'm not going to bore our listeners with the entire speech, but could you really remember?
Could you spares me as well.
Could you really do the whole thing?
I may stutter on one line or two, but yeah, I could. I could do the whole line, whole thing still.
Another big one for me was I was doing a physiology class, so I had to learn like all the muscles and all the bones and all the, you know, occipital sutures and the little names for it. And so I taught you those as well, and it helped me learn.
Huh, I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, well, let's see, that was 11th grade. That was the next year. That was our thing. But that, according to research, this is a strategy that pays off big at test time. Basically, as soon as you receive information, you reteach it to someone else pretty much immediately. You recall details better and longer than if you just read it and reread it in a textbook. So basically, if you want your kids to do good on tests, try to get them to teach you what they've learned. Next up in the pile, it seems that babies and mothers are actually more connected than we ever thought possible. It looks like infants who are separated from their mothers can, when they're reunited, they can actually feel what their mothers are feeling. Research shows that babies pick up on the subtle signals that indicate what their mothers are feeling. So they use tone of voice, facial expressions, and based on this stuff, we know that they're tuned in very closely to their mother's emotions, says Sarah Waters, a human development researcher at Washington State University. So what they did was they conducted a study where half of the group, they stressed the moms out like crazy. They gave them a speech about strengths and weaknesses in front of an intentionally grumpy audience. So the mothers, they had to give a speech about this, and the audience just was not responding. The other group of mothers watched a relaxing video instead. And when the mothers reunited with their babies, they brought their experiences with them. The stressed moms, both they and their babies, showed signs of sympathetic nervous system activity that correlated very strongly, more strongly than those of the relaxed moms and their little babies. The correlation, in fact, grew stronger over time when the stressed moms were allowed to hold their babies upon the reunion, but not when they remained separate. This provides evidence that touch plays a key part in mother's transmission of stress signals. So, when you're a mom and you've got your babies and you're stressed out, your baby can absolutely feel that and they know what's going on. So it's important when you have little ones to try to be, as calm as possible, because if you're stressed, your baby definitely is feeling that as well.
I just don't understand how seeing your mom's smile or cry...
That's where you learn it.
Whatever. I don't think that proves the point.
Well, you should go talk to Psychology Today then, because that's what they say.
I'm going to write a very sternly worded email.
Washington State University, my friend, you're out there. You should go up to Washington State University and talk to Sarah Waters, because that's what she says.
Okay, well, that name is very appropriate for living in this area.
Why, because of all the rain or because of the Puget Sound?
Both combined.
All right. Well, did you have a chance last week to listen to my Indian legend that I read?
No, and I drove for 12 hours. I had all the
you
time in the world.
You had 12
to
hours, and you didn't listen to the Indian legend?
I even, like, 6 of those hours was just silence, too. Like, I really had so
Seriously?
Much time to do it, and I just didn't.
Well, you gotta drive back home, right?
Yeah, I'm gonna download it. I'm gonna download it as soon as this call's over.
You should. And we're gonna be doing you're probably not gonna hear it because I recorded it earlier. But this one is the legend I'm gonna read today is called The Coyote and the Monster of Clearwater.
Ooh.
It's a Nez Perce tale. I got this out of a book called Legends of the Rocky Mountains. So the Nez Perce, I guess they're out here in the Rocky Mountains, and this tale I'm going to be reading, Coyote versus the Monster at Clearwater, was related way back in 1955 by a guy named Otis Half Moon. There's some details in the story that were added by Oliver Frank while he was pointing out some of the topographical features that are mentioned in the story. So One of the cool things about Indian legends is they always relate to like actual places that you can go visit and see. And so this story that I'm going to read, there's like a rock that looks like a monster's head. And nice. It's all about how the coyote defeated him. And you can go visit the monster head where the coyote kicked his butt. Apparently, his eyes and ears were on the very spot that Lewis and Clark party camped in 1805. So they visited the site of this Indian legend.
And camped on his head.
And camped on his head, yes. Apparently, there's this monster in the Rocky Mountains, and he swallowed like the ancient animal people. You know how in native legends, they have like the animals are people. And so this monster is like eating all of the animal people, and they're like all in his stomach just living. And there were more on the inside of his stomach than on the outside. And so the coyote is going to save the day.
Well, spoiler alert.
Well, the Animal Council, they send the silver salmon down the Clearwater, Snake, and Columbia Rivers and ask the coyote for help. And he's like, all right, I can help you out. And he goes and kicks the monster's butt.
So I thought you said you were going to read this story.
I am going to read the story. I already read it.
You're just telling everybody what the story is going to be before reading it?
Well, it's like a synopsis. It's like it's like a trailer. You got to listen to hear the actual story.
This sounds more like you put the too long didn't read at the top of the message.
Look, I read the story. It's incredibly interesting. So you're going to have to wait until tomorrow to download and listen to it, which you should do on the boat because I'm going to post it early in the morning.
All right.
Are you going to listen?
I mean, yeah, but I don't know if it'll be on the boat. I'm kind of busy when I'm out there. I don't put anything in my ears.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a minute with the legend of Coyote and the monster of Clearwater.
The NativeTalk.net radio program. Always hot, no matter what time of the year. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Our house Grief Support Center's mission is to provide the community with grief support services, education, resources, and hope. Our house, with the support of trained volunteer group leaders, helps those grieving find sweetness in the tears. With your help, you too can become a volunteer and help grieving children, teens, and adults embark on the journey to hope and healing. For more information, visit ourhouse-grief.org or call 888-417-1444. Hi, this is Cliff.
And this is Brandon.
And this is the NativeTalk.net radio podcast. The greatest podcast ever produced.
Whoa, wait a minute. What?
What do you mean?
I'm pretty sure we're not the greatest podcast ever produced. I mean, have you heard of Serial?
No.
Cracked Podcast?
No.
Or Surprisingly Awesome?
No. Oh, okay. The NativeTalk.net radio podcast. The greatest podcast ever produced that I have actually listened to. So visit us online at nativetalk.net and tell your friends to download a few shows because, well, apparently we need it.
Yeah, if you ever want to measure up with podcasts that are actually good, like The Bugle with John Oliver or WTF with Mark Maron or Hardcore History. The nativetalk.net radio program with Cliff and Brandon.
A child of five could understand our show. Quick, someone get me a child of five.
Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Welcome back to the program. If you want to be a part of the show and give us a call, leave a message. 970-278-5791 is the number. Now, I'm recording this on the 21st of, what is this, October in 2017. I don't know how much you pay attention to the news, but there are crazy wildfires out there in California and in that general region. I mean, all the way up and down that area. And the death toll, I mean, it just seems to keep rising. Now, it would even be worse if Jan and John Pascoe hadn't remembered their neighbor's pool. Now, why they didn't evacuate way sooner, I will never know. But they decided to stick it out at home. I mean, it's one of those things they think, you know, it's not going to get me. Well, it did. It turned out that they became trapped as the flames got closer and closer and soon surrounded their entire mountaintop Santa Rosa home. But they did not die. They are still alive today. They were saved by spending 6 hours sheltering in their neighbor's pool as the fire raged in all around them. Now, this is why they didn't want to leave. Jan is 65 years old, and John is 70. And they're like, oh, Myrna, Jan. I'm sorry, not Myrna. Jan, I don't want to leave. We got to stay here and protect the house. Oh, Johnny, there's too much fire. What are we going to do? Let's go in the pool. So that's exactly what they did. It looks like they initially tried to drive away, but encountered what they call a wall of flames. So they immediately fled to the pool that they knew was nearby, called a 911 dispatcher, who advised them to shelter anywhere they could. Now, John, as I mentioned, he was 70. He's not a very good swimmer. I mean, he's old. And so he really didn't want to get in the water. But as the flames ignited both the neighbor's home and his and tree right next to the pool, he decided he would risk it. The Pascos say they held each other all night long in the pool. Always not sweet. They stayed under the surface as much as they could to avoid the flying embers and debris. And when they emerged, they found that their entire home and the neighbor's home had burned entirely to the ground. In fact, they found they left their phone, the one that they used to call 911. They put it in a sock next to the pool, and when they tried to retrieve it, they found it had melted. So, yeah, it was a pretty serious situation. This is why you evacuate when they tell you to go. It looks like hundreds are currently listed as missing in what is already the deadliest fire outbreak in the state of California for at least the past 80 years. So, yeah, not a good idea to hang out, watching your home. Fire is a serious business. All right, now let's get to our legend of the day about Coyote versus the monster. Coyote came up the Columbia, into the Snake River, and up the Snake to the Clearwater. In the Clearwater Valley, he saw the monster he had been told about, and soon he decided what he would do. He would trick the monster into swallowing him. So he made a strong rope and climbed to the highest peak in the Wallowa Mountains. With his rope, he tied himself there, and he howled a challenge to the monster. Coyote was so far away that he looked like a blade of grass on the mountaintop. The monster saw him, desired him, and drew a deep breath. But the thing he wanted did not move. Then Coyote, carrying his rope, crossed the Snake River to the Seven Devils Mountain. There, he tied himself again, and again he howled a challenge to the monster. The monster tried to suck him in as he had sucked in the other animal people, but Coyote did not move. He was tied fast to the peak. Then he moved into the Salmon River Mountains, nearer the monster. Above Whitebird, he made a ridge that looked like a saddle. After he had tied himself to a mountain, he put some bushes over his head and peered over the ridge. He called down to the monster, "You can't swallow me!" The monster looked up at the place where the voice had come from, but he couldn't see anything except some bushes on top of the ridge. Coyote stood up and called again, "You can't swallow me!" The monster took a deep breath and tried to swallow him. Tried to suck him in, but Coyote did not move. Then the monster knew who was challenging him. "You are Coyote," he said. "I have been waiting for you for years. I will swallow you." That was what Coyote wanted to hear. So he cut the rope and allowed the monster's breath to pull him down the mountain. On the plateau near Grangeville, he took some white paint out of his bag, pulled up a rose bush, and poured the white paint into the hole where the roots had been. "A human race is coming," said Coyote. "They will need white paint for buffalo hides and many other things." The monster took another deep breath, and Coyote was pulled on toward the Clearwater Valley. He took some cow's roots from his bag and scattered them. He scattered many of them on the north side of Tolo Lake between Grangeville and Cottonwood. "The human race will dig cow's roots for food," said Coyote. The monster continued sucking in his breath, and Coyote kept moving towards him. On the high cliff overlooking Camas Prairie, he took the camas roots out of his bag and threw them into the valley below, many roots or bulbs. "The human race, the new people who are to come, will dig roots here for their food," he said. That is why the Camas Prairie used to be blue with camas every spring. Closer and closer, Coyote was drawn to the monster, just as he wished to be. At last, he was near its mouth. The huge jaws opened wide, and down Coyote went, swallowed just like a worm. Inside, he met Rattlesnake. Rattlesnake became angry and tried to bite him, but Coyote trampled on him and flattened his head. Then Grizzly Bear attacked him, but Coyote flattened his head as well. He scolded Rattlesnake and Grizzly Bear for not killing the monster as they should have. Coyote saw Black Bear also, but Black Bear was kind to him. He saw many other creatures down inside the monster's stomach. Those who had been there a long time were nothing but bones and skin wrapped around them. Those who had been there a short time already looked as if they were gradually having the life sucked out of them. Coyote pulled chunks of fat from around the monster's heart and fed the people who could eat. Then he talked with them. He showed them all the openings in the monster's body: the ears, the nostrils, the mouth, and the eyes. "This thing is going to die," he told the people, "and as soon as it does die, rush for the opening nearest you. Each of you take with you some of the bones of the dead people." Then Coyote took from his bag 5 knives and began to cut the cords that fastened the monster's body to its heart. The monster tried to persuade him not to kill, but Coyote hacked away. He broke 4 knives. "Be ready to leave," he said to the people as he picked up the 5th knife. With that 5th knife, he cut the last cord, and the heart fell down. The monster was dead. All the people left the monster's stomach. Coyote went out also. Muskrat was caught by his tail in one of the openings, but Coyote pulled him out. He jerked him so hard and so fast that he scraped some of the hair from Muskrat's tail. That is why part of Muskrat's tail today has no hair. Outside the monster, Coyote rubbed himself and wiped the sweat from his face. All the people he had freed admired him. All their friends who had not been swallowed by the monster thanked him and admired him. "I'm not through yet," Coyote told them. "Bring me the bones that you took from the monster's stomach." The bones were placed on the ground before Coyote. He stepped over them 5 times, and they came to life. Then Coyote cut the monster into pieces and threw the pieces in all directions as far as he could throw them. His friend Kotzkotz, the fox, stood watching him. "From these pieces," said Coyote to Fox, "I will make a human race to live on the earth." The legs, which he had thrown over the Rocky Mountains, he turned into the Blackfeet. "You shall be the Blackfeet," you shall be tall, long-legged people. Of the scalp, Coyote made the Crow Indians. He said, you shall be the crow. You will be proud of your long hair. Of other parts of the monster's flesh and bones, he made the Flatheads and the Bannocks and the Sioux Indians, all the different tribes. And when he thought Coyote had finished, Fox asked, who's going to live in this country, the best country of all? Coyote replied, why didn't you ask me sooner? I would have saved some of the flesh for the people here. But bring me some water from the river, and I will finish my work. This will be my greatest creation. So he took blood from the monster's heart, mixed it with water, and sprinkled it up and down the valley. You will be the Nimiipuu, he said. You will not be a large tribe, but you will be powerful in fighting and in everything else. People made from the blood of the heart will be brave and strong. Then Coyote said to Fox, let us leave the heart and the liver here in the valley. They will be the history for the new human race. Coyote turned the heart and the liver into rocks. You can still see them today in the Clearwater Valley between Kamaya and Kuskia. On the north side of the valley, on the brow of a hill, are Coyote's fingerprints. He left them there when he wiped his hands after creating the human race. They, too, are history. Today, the Nimiipuu are called the Nez Perce Indians. So there you go, the story of Coyote versus the monster. Hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as I did. All right, well, that will do it for us today. I want to thank you for listening to the show. We'll be back next week with more stimulating Native Talk Radio, available online at nativetalk.net. We hope you'll have the chance to share the show with your friends and send them to our website. Let us know what you think, emailing us podcast@nativetalk.net, or use the phone number to leave a voicemail, 970-278-5791. Until next week, we hope you have a great one. See you guys.
Always remember, animals are your friends, but they still won't pick you up at the airport.
The NativeTalk.net radio program with Cliff and Brandon. Now, grab your nets and let's go fishing.